Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes!
Oh, it is.
It is.
Fight night here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM on a Friday. Streaming online, WQAM.com on your computer or on your smartphone, tune in radio app, radio.com app, however you listen. We appreciate your patronage here tonight. I guess Frank Zaffrey's too good to talk UFC 214 and too good to talk John Bones Jones with us. Well, he had something come up with family today. We might hear from Frank Zaffrey on the phone lines later on in the show, but we do have a couple of guests coming up tonight that I am quite excited about. 7 o'clock, one of our show favorites, Hall of Fame boxing writer, accomplished MMA writer as well, Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports is going to join us. Kevin Ioli, if you're not aware of his exploits, he was the first reporter to break the news that Mayweather would be fighting McGregor a couple of months back when that deal was signed. Kevin is usually on top of stuff like that. You know, a lot of stuff I want to get to with Kevin Ioli tonight, including Conor McGregor repeatedly breaking a cardinal rule of what you're not supposed to do after sparring sessions. We're also going to, at 6:25 tonight, in about 20 minutes, we'll talk with 9-time UFC veteran Dean Thomas, American Top Team coach now. And why? Like, I think it's timely to talk to Dean Thomas this evening. He's a friend of the program as well, but he's one of Tyron Woodley's head coaches. And, you know, Tyron Woodley did successfully defend his title for the third time this past weekend at UFC 214, defeating Damian Maia by unanimous decision. But Woodley has become a very hot topic as of late because the fight was not good, right? The fight was not exciting. You know, Tyron Woodley, God bless him, he stuffed every Damian Maia takedown attempt. Damian Maia attempted 21 takedowns, which is an extraordinary amount. Even for a 5-round fight, 21 takedown attempts is a lot, but 21 failed takedown attempts is astronomical. And there's no question Woodley did more damage with his strikes. He won that fight, plain and simple. But it was 5 rounds of your life that you might want to have back because it wasn't very exciting. So now Tyron Woodley has crept into this territory where fans are criticizing him just for protecting the belt, doing enough to win, but not risking anything in a fight. And Dana White was critical of him for that very reason afterwards. And with Dana not being pleased by Tyron's effort, even in victory, it cost him a potential fight with George St. Pierre. George St. Pierre, one of the biggest names in the sport's history, is about to return from a 4-year-long retirement by the time he returns. But Dana was kind of debating whether he should let GSP move up to middleweight and challenge Michael Bisping for the middleweight belt or return to his, you know, natural weight class, 170 pounds welterweight, where GSP used to be the champion, best welterweight champion of all time, and fight Tyron Woodley. Well, after, you know, Dana White being very critical of Woodley's performance last week, that made the decision very easily. George St. Pierre will be fighting Michael Bisping and not Tyron Woodley, and there's been a lot of backlash in the conversations that Dana and Tyron had, not only with each other but about each other. Bad-mouthing each other through the media. And Woodley had said after the fight that he had some dirt on Dana that he was going to release. And I was very curious as to what that might be, right? I was very curious if that were maybe leaked conversations they had had about contract negotiations that weren't so nice, if it was incriminating pictures of Dana White. I don't know what T-Wood thought he had on Dana, but apparently now we're never going to know. Because Tyron Woodley has said that he and White have talked it out. There was some yelling, there was some screaming, but they both shook hands at the end of it. They've mended fences, according to Woodley. And they're all right moving forward. And we will talk to one of Tyron's coaches, Dean Thomas. Said, you know, one of the things I want to ask Dean about is, what's it like being caught in the middle of that, right? Because Dean and Woodley are very close. But Dean is also close to Dana White. They do a reality show together. And Dean does a UFC official podcast. So he and Dana have a good relationship. He and T-Wood have a great relationship. Was he ever the middleman in that little feud? And did it make him feel awkward? That's one of the things I want to ask Dean about. And I also want to ask Dean, you know, plain and simple, how did he think Tyron performed last week? Is Tyron getting too much flack for that performance? Is he not getting respected enough for that? But a guy who is getting respect coming out of victory last week, you know, the Woodley Maya fight was the co-main event. And then the main event, I thought, made up for a lot of that. John Bones Jones returns to prominence. John Bones Jones back from suspension, back from being stripped of his light heavyweight title. And he defeated the usurper, the fake champion, Daniel Cormier, who I like a lot. And here's the thing about that fight. Very clearly, that was a matchup of the two best light heavyweights in the world. But the problem is John Jones is just in another stratosphere. He's in another league. I mean, Daniel Cormier, he, you know, I give him credit. He was a champion for the last couple of years in John Jones's absence, because unlike John Jones, wasn't getting in trouble with the law, wasn't getting suspended for being on cocaine, you know, didn't have the outside of the octagon issues. And he represented the UFC very well during that time, but never at any point was Daniel Cormier a better fighter than John Jones. Not 2 years ago when John Jones beat him by decision, not while John Jones was suspended or out, not when he fought John Jones last week, because this time Jones actually finished the fight, and now the rightful champion has reclaimed his throne. And it would not surprise me if 38-year-old Daniel Cormier never fights again, because he had already, he'd reached UFC gold, but without a win over John Jones, he'll never be known as the best ever. And now that he's lost to John Jones twice emphatically, it's hard to imagine him getting a third fight with John Jones anytime soon. And at 38 years old, how much more time do you have to reclimb that ladder all over again? So he may just call it a career. If you saw the way he was crying, very emotional in the octagon after the loss, where he did get knocked out pretty brutally, didn't look like a guy who's planning on fighting again. And let's talk about that knockout finish. You know, to be fair to DC Cormier, looked pretty impressive right until the end of it. 3 minutes, 1 second into the third round. First 3 minutes of the opening round, right out of the gates, John Jones looked spectacular. Like, it looked like you were watching vintage 2010 John Jones for the first 3 minutes of that fight. Aggression, big-time elbows, creative striking techniques, mixing it up to the body, throwing the knees. It was like a tornado that he hit Daniel Cormier with early. But Cormier, I think, learned a lot from the first time he fought and lost to Jones, where he was very hesitant. He allowed Jones to get into a rhythm and use his reach. And he also learned a lot from fighting the lanky Alexander Gustafsson in one of his recent title defenses. And Cormier took the fight to Jones, really took over momentum late in the first round. I thought Cormier did enough to steal that first round. You know, just the patience, mixing up the leg kicks, the lead leg, the way he was attacking that on Jones was very good. Was getting inside, throwing unpredictable combinations, didn't give Jones time to set his feet and really find a rhythm in that fight. And the same thing, it was rinse and repeat in the second round. And then in the third round, oh, Jones hit him with that just perfect left high kick. Shin on bone, man, shin on temple. And Cormier took a dirt nap at the end of that. And okay, like, you'll see this sometimes in MMA fights, and it's why it's a very dangerous sport. I thought the referee probably allowed Jones to land a couple of extra ground and pound punches beyond what he should. And, you know, you had a scary moment in there for 2-3 minutes after the fight when Cormier wasn't moving. Cormier wasn't getting up. And at that time, you hold your breath and hope the guy is okay. And he was okay after that. But, you know, I talked about how emotional Cormier was, and the fact that Cormier had just been knocked into next week by John Bones Jones. I hate it when they do post-fight interviews with a guy who's just been knocked out. And Joe Rogan has since apologized for it. Yeah, I'd always wondered in that moment, is it Rogan's decision? Is it a producer in the truck in his earpiece? Like, hey, you got to go in there and talk to Cormier. Is it Dana White whose voice is on the earpiece? You got to talk to him now. Yeah, Rogan revealed that, yeah, it was his decision. He called the audible and he regretted it afterwards. Right. I mean, Rogan is in there with the microphone. He talked to John Jones first, who called out Brock Lesnar. Then he talked to Daniel Cormier, who is very sad and very emotional and really had no business being interviewed right after getting knocked out cold. But Rogan had said that, you know what? He saw that moment, knowing what that fight meant to Cormier, because Cormier had said beforehand, if I beat John Jones, I am the greatest fighter ever. Like, this is so important to me. I cannot afford to lose to this guy. For the last, even beyond the first time they fought 2 years ago, for 4 or 5 years, John Jones and Daniel Cormier have had a heated rivalry. The two of them have said nothing nice about one another, really, until after that fight was over, when Jones said some nice things about DC. But very heated rivalry, a lot of animosity, a lot of hatred. And since that moment was so big, I think Rogan decided, you know what? This is such a crucial part of UFC history. I've got to get DC's comments. But DC was not all there after that. It's just a bad time to get a fighter on the microphone. And, you know, people were mad at Rogan for it. And I understand it. He felt bad about it. It's why he came out the next day and apologized for that on Twitter. And you know, I mentioned after that victory, John Jones goes out and calls out Brock Lesnar. Is that a fight you want to see? 56022 on the plumbers911.com text line. That's how you reach us, but please don't text and drive. People are very split on that. Very split. I mean, those of you who are more, you know, right-brained, more inclined towards sports entertainment, you're big pro wrestling fans. Oh, I want to see the Beast Incarnate fight John Jones. Those of you who are just in it for the ride are very much on board with Jones versus Brock Lesnar. I've talked to a lot of people who say, Dono, tell me when this is happening. I'm buying the pay-per-view, or I'm flying out to Vegas to watch the fight. I'm all aboard this 1,000%. But then you talk to a lot of other people who, you know, want to uphold the integrity of sports, and they want to hold up the integrity of title contenders and challengers and waiting in line for your turn. And they say, I want no part of this circus. I want no part of the freak show that would be, you know, retired, drug test failure, disgraced Brock Lesnar taking on the greatest mixed martial arts fighter of all time, because I believe that is what John Bones Jones is, not a legitimate loss on his record. You want no part of that because the fight doesn't make sense. All it is a cry for money. And you want to see Alexander Gustafsson, who's next in line at light heavyweight, get his rematch with John Jones. I understand both sides of it. And to be honest with you, I would prefer to run back Jones versus Gustafsson. If you watch the first fight a few years back, it was incredible. Incredible. Easily the best fight John Jones has ever had, because the opponent brought it and had him on the brink of defeat. I mean, Gustafsson was kicking his ass for the first two rounds, and then John Jones, like the champion he is, took control of the fight late, and both guys were battered, hospitalized afterwards. Jones was even in worse shape as far as the hospitalization. He won the fight, but his face looked a lot worse for wear than Gustafsson did. Gustafsson didn't look so bad after the fight. It was tremendous, and I think it makes sense to run that back. I think Gustafsson has earned that, but I think the UFC, if they can, if they have the time to wait for Lesnar, because if Lesnar comes back out of retirement, because he's technically retired from MMA, I know he's still wrestling, he's still a pro wrestler, but if he comes back, he's got to be in a mandatory drug testing program for 5 months before he can come back and fight. So you might even be able to have your cake and eat it too. You might be able to do Jones versus Gustafsson and then do Jones versus Lesnar a little bit later on. But if you have to choose one or the other, I think the UFC would like to jump on the Lesnar versus Jones fight, because it's become so apparent over the last couple of years, ever since the UFC was sold to, you know, from the Fertitta brothers, Zuffa, they sell it to WME for $4 billion. They're trying to get return on that investment. You pay $4 billion up front to buy a sports mixed martial arts promoter. They are trying to make a lot of cash back quickly. It's why they were very eager to sign up to co-promote this boxing pay-per-view coming up, where their guy, Conor McGregor, is fighting Floyd Mayweather, and they're getting a big cut of that. With the way that they're looking to get big paydays, when they look at the possibility of John Jones, Brock Lesnar, all they see is dollar signs, and they're going to want to capitalize on that. And the UFC has always been about trying to make the most high-profile fights possible, but before they were sold for $4 billion, I think they were a little bit more conscientious about number one contenders and upholding the integrity. There's a lot less of that now, that they're trying to make quick returns on the investment.
And of course, you have to be careful. We don't want to shoot ourselves in the foot long term by damaging the product. But I think they look at John Jones versus Brock. At least Brock Lesnar is an MMA fighter, right? This is not like boxing taking Conor McGregor, who's never boxed before. Brock Lesnar has been a UFC heavyweight champion. So you can't blatantly say he doesn't deserve to be in the octagon with a UFC champion. He's been a UFC champion before. The fight just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense because John Jones has never been an official UFC heavyweight. He may move up to that someday, but the fight that would make more sense competitively would be Jones versus Gustafson. But the fight that makes the UFC a lot more money is Jones versus Lesnar. So if they can expedite that, if they can get Lesnar into that testing program, and Lesnar's got to feel confident he passes those tests, by the way, which is no guarantee because he failed a drug test last summer. But if they can put that fight together as quickly as possible, and if Lesnar wants it and Jones wants it, and they both do, because they both want to make a ton of money as well, that's going to be the fight that they target, man. All right, so on the other side, we're going to talk with Dean Thomas, 9-time UFC veteran and a coach of Tyron T. Wood Woodley. He's going to join us on the other side of the break. But I want to talk about the Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill. Oh, you know what? August 26th, Mayweather-McGregor, they'll have it at the Quarterdeck Plantation. They'll have it at the Quarterdeck Davy. They'll have it at the Quarterdeck Fort Lauderdale. Oh, I cannot wait to watch Mayweather versus McGregor. They have it at the Quarterdeck restaurants. The Quarterdeck has every UFC pay-per-view fight for zero cover charge. You walk right in, you enjoy the fight on the flat-screen, high-def TVs while you're enjoying the drink special. 2-for-1 happy hour all day, every day. It never ends. And the cocktails are awesome at the Quarterdeck. And by the way, the beer is always cold there. The drinks taste so good, and they don't water them down with the happy hour drinks, which is, I appreciate that. They don't water down the drinks at the Quarterdeck. The food is delicious. The sushi, the fresh seafood like the oysters and Maine lobster, meat falls off the bone, baby back ribs, burgers, turkey burgers, chicken ciabatta sandwich. But whatever you do, when you're at the Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill, and you save room for dessert because the key lime cheesecake, it is the perfect way to finish every meal. You want to find your location. To find the location nearest to you, you go onto the web, World Wide Web, quarterdeckrestaurants.com, find your location, and head to the Quarterdeck as soon as possible, because the Quarterdeck is where you come for the food and stay for the fun.
Listening to Fight Night, served up by the Quarterdeck on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
And we go out now to one of our show favorites as we visit the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Toyota of Hollywood has moved 2 blocks south of their old location. Get there now and visit them on the web at toyotaofhollywood.com. This guy has a lot on his resume. 9-time UFC veteran, former American Top Team fighter, now American Top Team coach. He coaches Tyron Woodley. He's a reality TV star. Dana White looking for a fight. He's a radio star up in Palm Beach. Dean Thomas joining us now. Dean, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing real good, man. I just got a haircut. I'm fresh. What's happening?
Look at you. Well, let me start first with a couple of Woodley questions. I was reading this week, Dean, that he and Dana White have mended some fences. Are they good now? Have they put the animosity behind them from earlier this week?
Oh, yeah. And I'll say this. You know, those two, they kind of, you know, because they have very similar personalities, is that they kind of go at it often. You know, so they're always kind of at each other's throat every so often. But you know, it's all love, man. At the end of the day, you know, they both want the same things. Sometimes they have to, you know, go about them in different ways, but they both want the same things. And, you know, they just have to talk every so often. And they did, man. They mended some fences and everything's good again.
Being that you're very close with both, you know, you coach Woodley and you and Dana are tight. Like, do you ever get sucked into the middle? Like, are you ever the middleman in that?
No, I'm not. I try not to be. You know, oftentimes, like, Tyron will say, man, I'm sorry, man, if any of this comes back on you. But it never does. You know, Dana knows how to separate, and he doesn't associate our relationship with his relationship with Tyron as much as many people think it would.
So did you have any inside info on what that dirt might – we'll probably never see what that dirt was, but Tyron claimed to have something. Do you have any idea what that was?
No, I don't know. And, like, everybody asked me that, and I don't want to know what that – if there was like some legitimate dirt that Tyron had on Dana and it came out, I'm sure that would have been the end of my relationship with Dana. So I don't know what it was, but I was praying that Tyron didn't like come up with something.
Now, you, of course, had a bird's eye view in the corner of Tyron for his title defense over Damian Maia last Saturday at UFC 214. When you're in that corner and you're coaching, are you kind of aware of the way that the crowd is receiving the fight? And what were your thoughts on the fight, quite frankly?
First off, I'll say I thought it was a beautiful display of mixed martial arts from Tyron's part. I mean, I just love the fact that he enforced the game plan that we worked with. You know, I mean, we worked those things, and he was able to execute perfectly. Now, obviously, and he got his touches. I mean, a lot of people are saying that it was boring, but, I mean, if you look at Damian Maia's face afterwards, his face tells a different story. Tyron got his touches. He wasn't able to get the big power shots that he wanted to based off of his injury, but he got his touches. Had he not been injured, I think he would have knocked him out.
And Maia goes 0 for 21 on takedowns, which means Tyron defended all 21 takedowns in that fight. How much extra time, and of course Woodley's a great wrestler, but how much extra time did he work on defending those takedowns leading up to this fight?
Yeah, he spent about 2 weeks with Ben Askren solely working on, you know, different ways to defend the shot. And Maia's extremely good at taking guys down, even wrestlers. So, I mean, he had to do a lot of different things to defend that shot. I mean, it was very specific details that he had to really pay attention to in order to defend that shot and not allow, well, two things. He couldn't allow himself to get put on the bottom and not allow Damian Maia to get around to his back. So, I mean, it was a very strategic plan and a lot of attention to detail that went into that. And, you know, if people understood that aspect of it, I don't think they would have treated him the way they did. And people have to understand this, too, is that people are saying, oh, well, he didn't open up enough, but he defended 21 takedowns.
Yeah.
If Tyron opened up more, he would have had to defend 30 or 40 takedowns because Damian Maia is really good about not letting you get a lot of punches off.
What do you think is next for Tyron? Who do you think the next challenger is going to be for that belt?
I really don't know. I think that they would want Robbie Lawler to run it back. But I think Tyron right now, you know, he needs a break. I mean, it's just been camp back to back to back. He hasn't gotten a break since he won the belt. I mean, that's four title fights in 365 days. And not a lot of guys can say that. So he's fighting the top of the top, you know, in a short amount of time. So I think he needs a break, but plus his shoulder is messed up. I don't know if he's going to get surgery. He's still waiting on, you know, some recommendations from different doctors, but you know, he just needs a little break now, and, you know, those guys will figure out who the number one contender is.
Now, maybe it probably couldn't happen anytime soon because of the shoulder, but is there disappointment to not be getting a George St. Pierre fight, and is that something that could still happen down the road?
Yeah, I think it will still happen down the road. Here's what I believe, too, is that this, you know, with his shoulder being hurt and possibly getting surgery on it, it's a blessing in disguise because I think, you know, he just needs some time away from the fans, you know what I'm saying, and to do some other things. He needs some time away because so that people kind of forget, you know, the reaction to this fight. Now, I'm not going to say I think it was a great fight, but the reaction from the crowd wasn't great.
Yeah.
And I think we need to forget about that and just put that behind us and then get back to what Tyron does good and start promoting him in a better light. So I think he does need some time away from the fans.
9-time UFC veteran and now accomplished mixed martial arts coach Dean Thomas joining us here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Dean, did you get a chance to watch the main event? What were your thoughts on John Jones, the way he came back and knocked out Cormier?
Now, John Jones is my opinion. He's the GOAT right now.
I'm with you.
He's the GOAT. And, you know, we can say what we want, but, you know, the only loss is due to a disqualification from almost murdering a guy. So, yeah, he's the GOAT. And, like, and I had a discussion with somebody about this yesterday, is what may have looked like a back-and-forth fight. Now, obviously, Cormier was getting off a little bit. But you could see Jones setting that up, you know, going to the body, and then he went to the head with that off. He kind of faded back into the head with that kick. I mean, that was just beautiful. So what may have looked like, you know, a back-and-forth fight was really, you know, Jones setting something up while Cormier is getting off. But he eventually, Jones got what he wanted, got that kick, and it was a wrap from there. I mean, Jones, he's the GOAT. Can't really dispute that.
You know, and with Cormier, you know, being in the late 30s and now being 0-2 against John Jones, it may take a while before he could get a third fight. Do you think that was the last time we see DC?
No, I don't think it's the last time we see him. He's a competitor. I can't imagine him going out that way, you know, especially with this meme, insensitive meme going on going around about him and, you know, him getting knocked out. I think he's a competitor. I think he comes back and fights another couple of fights, gets some wins, and then he goes out on his own terms. I don't think he's going to let a loss dictate him going out.
And here's the question on every fight fan's mind as we're talking with Dean Thomas, nine-time UFC veteran here on the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. John Jones, after the fight's over, calls out Brock Lesnar. And, Dean, I'm not saying I wouldn't watch it. I would love it. I would pay for it. I'd go crazy. I would also like to see Jones rematch Alexander Gustafsson. I think that should be the next fight. But do you think we're going to see Lesnar versus Jones? And how would you see that fight playing out?
We will absolutely see that fight. If there's any chance of making that fight happen, we will absolutely see it happen. Because that's where we are right now in MMA.
Yeah.
It has came full circle to back to being just strictly entertainment, which is why, like, belts don't mean anything. Rankings don't mean anything. You know, nothing means anything except for entertaining, you know, fans and bringing in new fans. So that's where we're at right now. So it's very difficult from my perspective because I'm a purist. And I pay attention to rankings. I pay attention to winning and strategy and science behind fighting. But that's not what people want to see. People want to see, you know, just they want to be purely entertained MMA style. And that was, you know, 100% WWE style entertainment. I'm sorry, I said MMA style, but WWE entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're at right now with MMA is we're WWE style entertainment.
Dean Thomas, nine-time UFC veteran. And you're right, it's a lot different than in your glory days, Dean. The sport really has come full circle.
Yeah, it has. I mean, it started out as a spectacle. And then it started, you know, at one point when I was fighting, it was more so about, you know, who's the best, who's the toughest, who's the most skilled. And then it went right back to just being purely entertainment. And it's a bit sad, but I get it. I mean, you know, the sport won't survive if the money's not there. So I get it.
Well, on that note, you would obviously put Mayweather-McGregor in that same conversation. Or do you take issue with that because it's an MMA guy against a boxer?
No, it's the same thing. It's still WWE. It's still just pure entertainment. I mean, we all know what's going to happen in that fight. I don't expect it to even be close. It'll be the first three rounds that may be close because Mayweather, that's just the way he fights. But, I mean, the skill level will be very apparent by the time that fourth round hits and Mayweather just says, you know what, let me get this guy out of here. And I feel like he's going to get it stopped. I'm not sure Mayweather will get knocked out cold or go out, but the ref will go, all right, kids, you had enough.
And people forget you're a pioneer. You know, Don King ended up stopping the fight from happening, but you were supposed to fight Ricardo Mayorga in an MMA fight back in, I think, like circa 2009 or circa 2010. So Dean Thomas was dabbling in crossover fights before anybody else was.
Yeah, but he was coming over to my world.
Right. So that was way better for you.
He was coming to my world. And even in that, I wasn't planning on boxing him. And he's nowhere near the boxer that Floyd Mayweather is. You know, so I wasn't planning on standing up with him for 1 second. I was going to take him down and go ahead and get rid of him within seconds.
When that fight got scrapped at the last minute, what was the most disappointing part of that? The fact that you wouldn't get the payday because that was yanked from under you. What, like a day before or the day of the fight?
Well, the promotion did. They did it right. They did me right. They paid me.
Okay, good.
Which I took it as, you know what, they paid me to promote the fight. The fight never happened, but yeah. I got paid enough to where I was happy enough to say, all right, I promoted the fight, so y'all gave me some money. But the most disappointing part about that for me was the fact that I never got to get a chance to beat somebody of that name recognition, you know, because he was a big name in boxing, and it would have did a lot for my career to have fought that fight and beat that type of name.
Would have been nice, man. I wanted that for you, but you're doing big things now in coaching, Dean. You don't need it.
Yeah, you know, like everything works its way out. You know, I take every advantage and every opportunity I can have, and everything worked its way out. But I needed all those experiences to be where I am today.
Great stuff, man. I always appreciate your time. This is a world traveler, a great coach, former UFC veteran, 9 times in the octagon, Dean Thomas. You want to follow him on Twitter at Dean Thomas. Dean is spelled D-I-N. And you can watch him on Dana White's Looking for a Fight. Hey, what's the podcast that you do, Dean? What's it called?
Oh, it's called The Morning Wood Show, and that's with me and Tyron Woodley. And, we chop it up, and, you know, Tyron gets a chance to speak his piece. You know, he's one of the more controversial personalities in MMA, and you get to hear it right from his mouth. So go to the Morning Wood Show. This is me and Tyron Woodley.
Good stuff, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, my man. I'll take it easy, man. I'll see you soon.
Yeah, good stuff there from Dean Thomas. He's one of Tyron Woodley's head coaches, so I love getting his perspective on that fight. Loved it. And yeah, listen, it's funny though how this works, right? Where people are all over Tyron Woodley for not being aggressive enough, but why not more hate for Damian Maia, who got soundly beaten? Because he could have also brought the fight. Instead, he gets 21, all 21 of his takedowns stuffed, and yet people are blaming Woodley for the fight.
And of course, you say that when our partner in crime, Mr. Frank Zaffer, is on next to you, because he's a huge Damian Maia fan.
He is, that's right. I'm surprised Frank was brave enough not to show his face. Well, you know what? I'm not surprised. If Damian Maia had won, Frank would be here to my right. You're right about that.
Or at least call in into the show.
Yeah, he's a coward. He's yellow. He's a coward, this Frank Zaffrey. It's a chicken. We're going to talk with Kevin Ioli at 7 o'clock. Coming up next, I take issue with part of the way Conor McGregor is playing the PR game. Don't get me wrong. He is one of the best things that ever happened to combat sports. I mean, Conor McGregor is a spark plug. He's a firecracker. He's an amazing fighter in his own right. And he is working his ass off to promote this Mayweather fight. But there's one thing that Conor does that I take issue with. We'll explain next here on WQAM.
You're listening to Fight Night at Quarterdeck on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
You know, when fighters are preparing for a big bout, you bring in sparring partners who can mimic your opponent. Sometimes if you're in like a big training camp, you've already got guys who you train with on a regular basis who can do the job, who can mimic your opponent. But you know, in the case of somebody like Conor McGregor, you're getting ready for a completely different challenge, right? You've never boxed before. There's certainly nobody who trains at Straight Blast Gym Ireland who can mimic Floyd Mayweather in boxing. So you have to bring in professional boxers to give you a different look. And I thought McGregor had a good thing going with Pauly Malignaggi in his camp, retired boxer. You know, Malignaggi, who is a pretty outspoken guy, does a lot of radio for CBS Sports Radio. He's been in this building before, recently retired. But I thought that was a pretty good thing for McGregor to bring in a guy like Malignaggi to sort of mimic Mayweather and give him those looks to help him prepare for this mega fight coming up less than a month from now. But, of course, McGregor found a way to ruin that. And I like McGregor. You know that. I think he's great for mixed martial arts. He's great for combat sports. He gives us a lot of material with the way he runs his mouth. He is a pioneer. He is a shameless self-promoter, and he is amazing at that. I love so many of the things that Conor McGregor does in the octagon and out of the octagon, but something he's now repeatedly doing that I cannot respect and I cannot stand for is throwing sparring partners under the bus. The cardinal rule of sparring is you don't talk about what happens in sparring. Because first of all, everything when you're sparring, the context is all messed up, right? Because when you've got sparring partners in there, a lot of the times they're not trying to beat you and you're not trying to beat them. They're showing you different looks and you're working through stuff. Like, sparring sessions are not fights. Because if you treated every sparring session like a straight-out fight and you go 100% and you're trying to knock his head into the seventh row, if you're going full speed and not taking different looks and giving different looks, you're not learning anything. So by definition, sparring sessions can be sometimes 75% speed, 50% speed. Sometimes you hold things back a little bit. They can be learning sessions as well. So what happens in a sparring session should stay there because it's not fair. And the first time that McGregor violated this rule was Chris Van Heerden last summer. And he was actually helping McGregor prepare for Nate Diaz, because this was before the Floyd Mayweather fight was anywhere close to being signed. But this professional boxer, Chris Van Heerden, who's been on this radio station before, you know, went to McGregor's gym to spar with him in boxing. And from what I've heard and from what Van Heerden had to say, he handed McGregor his ass. Like, he's a professional boxer. This was a boxing sparring session, and he outboxed McGregor. However, McGregor's team, they had a camera in there, which is another thing that guys don't like when you film sparring sessions, because this can happen. They edited the footage. They made it look like McGregor was winning because they only took the moments out there when McGregor was landing punches. They put the video out there and made Van Heerden, who's an aspiring young boxer trying to make his way and hit the big time, they made him look terrible, completely out of context. That was last year. Now this year, you've got these moles. Maybe they're not moles. I guess they're yes men is what you would call them, that train with Conor McGregor, who released these photos from the Pauly Malignaggi Conor McGregor sparring sessions. And they sent out this photo where Malignaggi is on the canvas on his back. McGregor is standing up, and they made it look like McGregor knocked him out, which, according to Malignaggi, it couldn't be farther from the truth. He was tripped. He happened to be on his back after getting tripped. They took a photo of it, and they made it look like this former boxing champion was knocked out by the MMA guy when it didn't happen. Even if it did happen, I have a problem with it because you're disrespecting the sparring relationship. But if you're lying about it, which McGregor is being accused of doing, that the photo is fiction, didn't get knocked out, he got tripped up, got pushed, was on his back, not from a knockout punch or a knockdown punch, was on his back from a push, the photo emerges, they make it look like McGregor was dismantling Malignaggi in the sparring session, and it's not fair to Malignaggi's reputation, and it's also not fair to build fans up with lies. I despise that. I was angry at Michael Bisping, current UFC middleweight champion, you know, a year plus back before he ended up taking the belt from Luke Rockhold. Michael Bisping kept telling these stories about how he kicked Luke Rockhold's ass in a training session when they worked together one day. To break that sparring confidence, to me, it's a bad look for anybody. And, you know, I'm fine with McGregor going out there yelling at the top of his lungs, making fun of Floyd Mayweather, selling the fight, getting people excited. Do what you got to do, man. Be you. You're going to make probably $100 million, at least $70 million off of this fight. Promote it to your heart's content. But when you start disrespecting people like Malignaggi, who are, you know, I'm sure he was getting paid, but he's still nice enough to work with you, to help you prepare for Floyd Mayweather, and then you're releasing what you're accused of doing, releasing bad information to try and make the guy look bad. I cannot support that. Stop disrespecting sparring partners because that is a sacred thing in the fight game. When you bring in sparring partners to help you look better and get better, and then you disrespect them by sending lies and fictions out there, that's something I cannot stand for. And what's happening now is McGregor's going to have a much harder time getting high-level sparring partners. There's still going to be guys out there who want to do it because they want to work with the guy and they want to make some money and they want to get famous, but for a guy like Malignaggi, who's one of the better sparring partners you can get, who doesn't need it, right? Like, he doesn't need the money or need the fame. He's probably doing it because he was interested and wanted to help you out, and then you disrespect him like that. McGregor's going to have a much harder time finding sparring partners from this point forward. We can talk more about this. There's also a potential dispute for Mayweather versus McGregor. They both would like to fight each other with smaller gloves, with 8-ounce gloves instead of 10-ounce gloves. We'll ask Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports about that. He joins us next here on Fight Night, Miami Sports Radio, 560 WQAM.
Time to lace them up. This is Fight Night on Miami Sports Radio, 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com. Fight Night is served up by the Quarter Deck. Come in for the food, stay for the fun. Now your hosts, Frank Saffery and Alex Dono.
Fight Night continues till 8 o'clock tonight here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Frank Saffery enjoying a well-earned night off, although my theory here is we bring on Kevin Ioli, covers mixed martial arts and boxing for Yahoo Sports and does great work there. Kevin, I feel like Frank didn't show up for work tonight because he's still upset about Damian Maia. He's a huge Damian Maia fan. The fight put everybody to sleep. The guy went 0 for 21 for takedowns. Not the best look for Maia, so I don't know if I'll ever see Frank again.
Yeah, I think that if you're a Damian Maia fan, that was a tough night.
You think the criticism to Woodley is fair? We talked to one of his coaches, Dean Thomas, earlier tonight, and just so we're clear, Kevin, I thought it was a boring fight, but you obviously Dean Thomas said he thought it was actually a very good tactical fight. He defended the performance. What did you think of Woodley's side of it?
Well, you know, I think Woodley did what he had to do to win. I mean, did I think it was the most exciting fight I've ever seen? No. But, I mean, Damian Maia is a very unique fighter in what he's able to do. And I don't think you just run out there and risk your championship. I mean, this isn't just another, you know, Ultimate Fight Night show.
Right.
This is a championship fight where a lot is at stake. And you have the chance to make a ton of money if you hang on to that championship. And if you make one small mistake against Damian Maia, you're going to be submitted. So, you know, while I did not like, you know, and think it was that entertaining of a fight, I blame Maia more than I blame Woodley for
that. I can agree with, and I feel like Kevin Maia is not getting enough or really any criticism for that. It seems like all the haters are going straight to Tyron.
Yeah, I look at it like this, and I say, you know, look at his fight in 2010 with Anderson Silva, and what was appreciably different about that fight compared to this fight that he had with Tyron Woodley? And the thing is, he's a one-dimensional guy. That's all he does. And if he cannot get you to the ground, then forget it. He cannot win the fight. And, you know, I think if you're going to be fighting for championships at the absolute highest level, he's a brilliant jiu-jitsu player. But when you're at that level of the game, you have to bring something else to make the at least one other aspect of your game. And I didn't feel like he had that. And so, you know, hey, Woodley had the great wrestling. He had the striking, obviously. And he had more to offer. Maia just didn't bring it, and so I blame him. You know, you have to find another way to win the fight if plan A doesn't work, but he just stuck with plan A the entire time.
Yeah, for any of the boredom that fans suffered during the co-main event, it was made up for in the main event. John Jones, Kevin, successful return, defeats Daniel Cormier for a second time, and this time, even though he, you know, it seemed like Cormier had taken control in the second and the early part of the third round, but Jones emphatically finishes him with a head kick. Your thoughts on where John Jones goes from here, and is he the greatest of all time?
Well, there's no question that he's the greatest of all time. I don't even think it's a debate anymore, and anybody who tries to bring up anybody else is just kidding themselves.
Right.
I mean, John Jones is in a class by himself. Look at who he's beaten. When you look at his opponents that he's vanquished, I mean, there's nobody that's beaten a level of opponent like that back to back to back to back. And he should be undefeated. He got a bad break from a referee and disqualified him incorrectly. And he has beaten, how many fighters has he beaten that are in or going to be in the UFC Hall of Fame? I mean, it's incredible. And Daniel Cormier very well could be one of the three or four best fighters of all time, not just active, but of all time. But nobody even thinks about that because of how dominant John Jones was over him in their two fights.
And for Jones now, Kevin, he calls out Brock Lesnar immediately after. What are some of the challenges in making that fight? Because, okay, Lesnar didn't have such good fortune with the drug test last time around. He would have to do 5 months of drug testing, would have to get licensed for this fight. Do you think this gets made anytime soon?
Well, not this year. I mean, first of all, it cannot be made this year. So a lot of people keep bringing up on the internet, they're going to fight December 30th. Absolutely no way, impossible. So here's what the rule is in terms of USADA with Brock retired, and he filed his retirement papers on January 3rd. The news didn't come out until February, but he actually filed the papers on January 3rd. So when you come back, you either have to be in the – you have to finish your suspension or be in the drug testing pool for 6 months. And it has to be in the greater of those two. So the greater of those two is his suspension, which is 6 months and 12 days. So he has to serve that out. To the best of our knowledge, even today sitting here, he has not filed on retirement papers. So he'd have to inform USADA and inform the UFC that he wants to come out of retirement, and then that clock on the suspension will begin. So the day that you hear Brock Lesnar has filed paperwork to unretire, then just go and figure out what is 6 months and 12 days from then, and you'll know the first day that he's able to fight, which is not this year. Calendar year 2017 is out for Brock Lesnar.
So do you expect a rematch with Alexander Gustafsson? That's likely the next place John Jones goes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's the fight that makes the most sense. I'll tell you what, me watching Ozdemir, you know, as great as that first Jones-Gustafsson fight was, and as badly as I wanted to see that fight over the last couple of years, you know, I go, boy, that would be a fun fight with Volkan Ozdemir, too, against John Jones. But I think the Gustafsson fight, you know, people have been waiting for it a long time, and I think that would make a lot of sense.
And I wanted to ask you, you read my mind about Volkan Ozdemir, who just obliterated Jimmy Manuwa in 42 seconds. Like, Ozdemir looks like the real deal now. And Kevin, I think it's so important to inject some new life into that light heavyweight division because John Jones has beaten virtually everybody there. I mean, a couple of years ago, I thought Anthony Rumble Johnson, that would be fun. Then he retires. So hopefully Ozdemir might be the next hope of a great challenge for John Jones.
You know, and I'll tell you, I never thought much of Jimmy Manuwa as a contender, but I did think a lot of Misha Cirkunov. And,
yes.
And the fact that he beat Misha Cirkunov, and, you know, I think it was not the same kind of, you know, hey, he went out there with Manuwa and took his head off, and it wasn't even a contest. And, you know, a little different circumstances in the Cirkunov fight. But, you know, Ozdemir has beaten some good guys already, and, I mean, he's shown that incredible power, you know, and that's what people like to see. People love to see knockout artists. And, you know, how do you beat John Jones? Well, we found you can't beat him by wrestling. You know, can you get in there and fire haymakers at him and knock him out? Well, you know, maybe that might be the way. Gustafsson, you know, did a nice job boxing him and striking him. Didn't win the fight, but he certainly maybe laid a blueprint out there. And if you have the thunder in your hands like Ozdemir has, you know, who knows? So, you know, he's setting himself up. And I think, you know, go out there and win a fight or two since it looks as if Jones has two fights going ahead here, Gustafsson and then Brock Lesnar. And then, he can come back and possibly be the number one contender.
Kevin Ioli, who covers mixed martial arts and boxing for Yahoo Sports, joins us here on WQAM. And, you know, Kevin, I can remember not too long ago, a few months ago, you and I talking about Chris Cyborg and whether she would ever get a crack at a UFC title and if the UFC would ever bring her back when she was in that legal trouble a few months back. Well, she does come back and she wins a belt, TKOing Tonya Evinger. And do you notice, Kevin, it seems like Dana White has been pretty open about mishandling Cyborg before. Does he seem now committed to really building the heavier women's weight classes now around Cyborg?
Yeah, I mean, I think he has no choice. I mean, she's very popular. People like her. And I think her story is resonating with a lot of the fan base. You know, this is a woman that's had so much to overcome, and she has such a unique talent that, you know, I think the fan base really likes that and wants to see her fight. And, you know, there has never been another woman's fighter like her. You know, you think of Ronda Rousey, and she had all those early finishes, but they were mainly because of her great submissions. Even the fights that she finished, you know, the Sarah McMahon fight and other fights where she finished in other ways, you know, but her submission set all that up. And that's not the case with Chris. You know, Chris's hands are just incredible, and she's like a male fighter in terms of the power she has in her hands. I mean, she hits so hard, and there's a video, and I'm sure you've seen it, Alex, online of her. She was training with Tito Ortiz, I think it was 2011, 2012, and he catches her in a triangle choke, and she picks him up and slams him, and I mean, that was such a feat of strength. It was an incredible thing to see. And anybody who hasn't seen that ought to just go to YouTube and look it up because it'll really open your eyes on what an incredible person she is.
Yeah, and Kevin, I think about, you know, one division lighter in women's MMA and Amanda Nunes, who was, you know, criticized greatly by Dana White after the way she pulled out of UFC 213. Then I also think about the way that Tyron Woodley was criticized by Dana White. Apparently they've since mended fences. Are you surprised that in this new era of the UFC, even under new ownership, that you still see some of these bullying tactics from Dana and you still see him sometimes throw his fighters and his champions under the bus?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at what Dana's done consistently, you know, he's always been the same way. And why does he love Conor so much? Why did he love Ronda so much? Because they came to fight and they were always there and they didn't turn down fights. And Dana is one, you know, hey, look, it costs him and it costs the UFC tons of money when they lose these main event guys off cards. So, you know, he just takes it to an extreme. I mean, he's upset that, you know, he lost his main event on that UFC 208 card. I mean, it wasn't the fact that Amanda pulled out, but you also had Lawler. Cerrone was supposed to be on that card. That card got pulled off. Garbrandt, Dillashaw was supposed to be on that card. That fight got pulled off. You know, it was just a card that was filled. And I think when Amanda couldn't go, it was kind of like the last straw to Dana. And, you know, I don't like to see him do that. But I think for the most part, the reason he does that is simply because you know, he is so competitive, and he hates to not put on the kind of show that he wants to do. But I think it would be in his best interest, the UFC's best interest, and the fighters if he stopped that. Because, hey, look, you don't want to diminish your own products. You know, you make a movie and say, well, the first 45 minutes of the movie sucks, and you don't want to watch it. So, you know, it's just like you want to go out there and you want to make your fighters look as good as possible so that both you and they can make as much money as possible.
You mentioned the name Conor McGregor. I was just talking about this last segment, Kevin. I am a Conor McGregor fan. I love what he's doing for combat sports, what he's done for MMA. Spark plug, I love watching him fight. I love watching him promote. The one thing I take issue with is the way he seems to be developing this pattern of throwing sparring partners under the bus, or his teammates throwing sparring partners under the bus. The Chris Van Heerden story last year didn't sit well with me. This Pauly Malignaggi stuff doesn't sit well with me. What do you make of him allegedly breaking this confidence, this sacred bond with sparring partners?
Yeah, I don't like it either. And I think, you know, he's a guy that's all out to promote himself, and he's clever, and he's really a genius. I mean, let's call it what it is. I mean, he's a terrific athlete, but as a marketer, he's a marketing genius, and he has a great sense for what's going to get people going. And, you know, so he wants to present himself in a certain way. And, you know, he did that. And, you know, I linked to it in my story on the Malignaggi deal today. You know, Van Heerden was upset and talked about it and said, you know, he patched together and doctored the tape to make it look somehow that it didn't. And then the same thing with Malignaggi. But I think that's just Conor, and you have to accept that. You know, there's good and bad with him, and, you know, you're going to have to accept the bad with the good. The good is that fact that he's going to show up to fight, and you know he's going to give you every single thing he has. You know, the bad is sometimes he crosses the line with his language like he did on the tour or doing some of these things.
And that tour, Kevin, I was out of town out of the country for much of that, and I know I missed some fireworks. Did that just go on too long? Is that what happened there, that by the time they got to the fourth and fifth stop, they just didn't have enough material, and it degraded into a circus?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things here. They should have changed the format of the tour up as it went along, because I think what ended up happening, and you used the word material, which was 100% right. I mean, they are not professional entertainers. You know, Conor is a clever guy, and, you know, he's very smart. But, he's not a stand-up comedian, and he doesn't have a team of writers coming up with material for him, nor does Floyd Mayweather. And I think what happened is, you know, the press conference got off to a good start. You know, it was a little, kind of raunchy a little bit, but not too bad the first stop. And, you know, a little raunchier the second stop, but still not too bad. And then it just, kind of went crazy on the third stop. And, you know, I felt like it crossed the line of decency. I mean, you're trying to attract families to these events, and you're marketing that way. And then it just crossed the line of decency that it didn't have to cross. And I think, you know, they might have been better served looking at it and saying, okay, going forward, we're not going to force them to do this, you know, because what it was each was a game of one-upsmanship. You know, McGregor would say something, so Mayweather thought he had to kind of come back and top that line. And, you know, each time one would say something, it pushed him to go further and further. I think it was a mistake, and it made each of them look bad. Although, at the end of the day, I don't think it's really going to hurt either side.
It's hard to believe we're just over 3 weeks away from that fight. I got a question, Kevin, from a listener that I didn't have an answer for. I thought maybe you might have an idea or an estimate. I don't think this is public information, but, you know, for Conor McGregor's side of it, do you have any idea, like, what percentage or how big the cut will be for the UFC? Like, how much do they stand to make as his promoter?
That is not out there. There has been talk bandied around that they could make upwards of $40 million off the fight, but I don't think that that's an accurate. They might make $40 million, but we don't know what the percentages are, and so you can't really evaluate the deal without knowing the percentages. I mean, that is there's two percentages that we have to know. One is, what is the split between Conor and Floyd? And that one has not come out. The Pacquiao Mayweather fight, I kind of came up with that one, and that was 55-45. And so I would think that it would be similar this time around. But again, you know, that hasn't come out. And then the other thing is, what is Conor's split with the UFC? And that one hasn't come out either. But given the fact that the people involved are saying, you know, Conor stands to make over $100 million, and and Floyd, you know, high 100 or close to 200, you know, and that could even go up given the estimates on this fight. You know, you can kind of figure out how it played out.
Last thing here for Kevin Ioli, covers mixed martial arts and boxing for Yahoo Sports. You know, at 154 pounds, Kevin, they're set to fight with 10-ounce gloves, that standard procedure. You see both guys, like on social media, Mayweather and McGregor, saying, oh, they want to fight with 8-ounce gloves. I didn't think that was ever allowed, but apparently they can get an exemption. Is that something they would really look to do, or is this just sort of part of the way they're selling the fight and nothing's going to come up from this?
It's a salesman job. The Nevada commission already said no, and it's a 10-ounce. They're going to wear 10-ounce gloves. That's what the rules are. And I have never heard of an exemption being given to wear gloves that aren't this size pursuant to their weight class. I've covered the Nevada Athletic Commission for many, many years, and I have never heard of that happening. You know, I know Floyd said it, but I think it's one of those things, you know, they're just trying to, you know, make this thing look like the biggest and the baddest. And, you know, Floyd wants to be tougher. You know, hey, you want to wear smaller gloves? I'm willing to wear smaller gloves. You know, it's just all posturing. And I think, hey, look, people are into the fight. You know, I quite don't understand why, but there's a lot of people that are into the fight. And so they're going to buy it, and it's going to do big business. And so just go with the rules that they are. And I think all this other nonsense, you know, they can just make sure you prepare yourself and come into the ring in shape and ready to put on a good show. That's the most important thing.
Well, and I imagine when I'm going to be watching the fight on TV, I don't know exactly where, whether it's at a friend's house or my house, but I will be seeing you ringside, right? You will be there?
I will be there, and I will be running a lot of Mayweather-McGregor stuff over the next couple of weeks. It's, you know, it is crazy to me, Alex. I mean, this is even more demand on this than there was on the Mayweather-Pacquiao. Now, Mayweather-Pacquiao, you know, was 5.5 years of build-up and people talking about it. Is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? And it just, you know, it kind of built to a fever pitch. And then when they went to that Heat Bucks game in Miami, that kind of put it over the top, and the fight was made right after that. Like, even the reaction to that fight wasn't like the reaction to this fight. This fight is just insane. People were just crazy with anticipation for it.
Great stuff here as always. You know, Kevin Ioli always brings it strong. And like he mentioned, there's going to be a lot of pre-fight material that Kevin's going to write on Mayweather versus McGregor as we're 22 days away from that fight. So you want to read his work, yahoosports.com, the MMA section and the boxing section, and follow him on Twitter at Kevin I. Kevin, thank you so much, my friend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Be well, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man, and that strong information there. And what he said made a lot of sense there at the end of it. Oh, why are my headphones not working? That's weird. I'm still on the air, right? Weird. All right, so what he said there at the end of it made a lot of sense. I saw this story about McGregor and Mayweather sort of bickering, saying, hey, we want to fight with 8-ounce gloves instead of 10-ounce gloves. Kevin's right. They're both trying to one-up each other. He talked about that in the press tour, the world tour. That the reason why that world tour just devolved into both guys name-calling and profanities, they ran out of material. They were trying to one-up each other with their trash talk the entire time, and now it's reached that point where they're trying to one-up each other on social media over the size of the gloves, right? They're saying, oh, 10-ounce gloves, maybe 8-ounce gloves. I'm sure Floyd next will offer, oh, I'll fight you in your UFC 4-ounce gloves. Nothing's going to come of it. When they enter the ring August 26th, they're both going to enter with the standard 10-ounce gloves. That's what you fight with when you're fighting at 154 pounds and up. That's going to be what you see on that Saturday evening. Fight night continues till 8 o'clock here tonight on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Bones Jones talking some Tyron Woodley, Christian Cyborg, Justino, and of course Mayweather versus McGregor. And yeah, I love it how, like Kevin says, like he really can't understand why people are so fanatical about this Mayweather versus McGregor fight. But of course, since he is the consummate professional who covers every big fight, Kevin will be ringside for that. If you know what Kevin Ioli looks like, you can play this Where's Waldo game. Every big UFC pay-per-view, every big boxing fight, unless they're happening simultaneously, because sometimes you'll have like an HBO boxing fight on the same night as a UFC pay-per-view, whichever one's bigger, Kevin Ioli is there, and he always has a ringside seat. Like, if you know what to look for, you can literally see Kevin Ioli in a press seat ringside for like every single big UFC pay-per-view ever held, every single mega boxing fight. Kevin Ioli is always there, man, and he will be there for Mayweather versus McGregor on August 26th. But yeah, I guess he's trying to wrap his head around it, and a lot of us are, why this fight is becoming such a phenomenon. It's so unprecedented, you know, to have that crossover. Even though, like, it's not like you're going to get a couple of rounds of boxing rules and a couple of rounds of MMA rules, but just the idea of one of the top MMA stars boxing against the top current boxing star and one of the best, at least defensive boxers of all time. You can give Floyd that, if nothing else. Two of the greatest ever, especially in Floyd's case, colliding in a fight. Like, that already makes it big. But then you add the fact that two of the most flamboyant personalities of all time, right? I mean, Muhammad Ali is obviously the best ever at that and will probably never be surpassed. But the best of this era in mixed martial arts, we've never seen somebody like Conor McGregor. You know, for those of you who are fans, like, what would you say? The closest we've ever had as far as self-promotion, trash talk, microphone work, the closest we've ever had to Conor McGregor was Chael Sonnen when he was in his trash-talking prime. But the thing is, like, Chael never won a title in the UFC, was never able to back it up the way that Conor has. And so it never quite held as much weight as what Conor is doing. Where, and also the fact that I think it helps Conor that, of course, he's not only very popular in the United States, but given that he is Irish and he carries that entire nation behind him, you know, America was never behind Chael P. Sonnen in the way that Ireland is completely behind Conor McGregor. So he carries an entire nation with him in whatever he does. So you got two of the most flamboyant personalities in the history of sports, and just the intrigue, the freak show, the circus aspect of one of the best mixed martial arts fighters against one of the best boxers ever colliding in one combat sports event. It's going to be a train wreck, I think. And not to say it won't be worth the money. Like, if you know what you're getting into, I think it's $100 well spent. Right, if you're spending that $100 on pay-per-view just for the spectacle of it and just for the curiosity, because you don't want to not be watching it, if that makes any sense. Because whenever somebody comes up to me and says, flat out, I'm boycotting it, I've talked to a couple people who work in the media. You know, they know that I'm into combat sports, so they volunteer this information to me. They tell me, Dono, I know you're into this. You've been talking about this Mayweather versus McGregor. It just insults me so much as a sports fan. I'm going to go out of my way not to watch it. I'm not going to the bar. I'm not going to the neighbor's house. I sure as hell am not ordering it. I sure as hell am not spending $3,500 for a ticket and a flight out to Vegas to watch it. I'm boycotting it completely. And my question would be, why? Especially if you're not the one paying for it. Because everyone's going to have a neighbor who's having a block party to watch it. And listen, if you are so inclined, I'm sure there are ways to pick up a stream on the internet, because I don't want to be the guy who's not watching it. You know, that's going to be water cooler talk at your workplace the following Monday. That's going to be what everyone is talking about on social media. It's just, it's reached this critical mass where if you're a part of today's society, if you are active on the web, if you're active on social media, if you're a millennial, this is not the sort of thing you can miss, right? If you're 60 and you don't have a Facebook and you don't have a Twitter and you just live your life from one episode of Matlock and Murder, She Wrote to the next, yeah, you can probably avoid it and not lose a second of sleep over it. But the curiosity factor of this fight, even if you're not the one spending $100 to order it, I think it's too costly not to watch it, because good, bad, embarrassing, boring, or ugly, everyone's going to want to talk about this the following day, the following Monday, maybe the following week if it does turn out to be a good fight. And I just can't afford not to be a part of that in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, like I told Kevin Ioli, I'm obviously not going to be there. I'm not going to Vegas for the fight, but I haven't really decided how I'm going to watch it. If I end up shelling out the cash, if I end up handing over my $100 to DirecTV, if I end up like walking around my neighborhood, seeing which one of my friendly neighbors have ordered it. Or, of course, you can go to the Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill, the Davie, Plantation, and Fort Lauderdale locations. They will have it there. Or we might go over to Frank Zaffrey's house, because we know he's ordering it. So maybe we'll invite some listeners out there. Frank is going to hate me for that, but that's what you get when you don't show up to work. One way or the other, I'm going to watch it because I can't afford to miss it. That's the bottom line here. But like Ioli always says, go into it with eyes wide open. Like, understand that it may not be a Rocky Balboa versus Creed type of knock him out, drag him out, 12-round affair, back and forth, knockdowns and near stoppages. It's probably going to be a very one-sided clinic in favor of Floyd Mayweather. If you understand that going in, I think you can find a way to be entertained by the spectacle of it.
Alex, then let me ask you this, me being the casual fan. I'm driving in my car. I listen to this great show called Fight Night of MMA, and I hear you tell about the whole story about the whole sparring thing and how Conor can be, you know, he might be faking it and stuff. And me as a casual fan, I'm like, okay, wait a minute. If he's not even able to spar with a regular jockey, what gives me any sense of an idea that he's going to be doing something good against Floyd Mayweather in about almost, what, 2.5, 3 weeks?
Yeah, that's a great point, because if Conor really was ready to beat Floyd Mayweather, he would be destroying Pauly Malignaggi in sparring, and he would have been destroying Chris Van Heerden in sparring, and every other boxer, every other journeyman drifter who comes into his gym to spar with him, he would be clowning them. Instead, yeah, it seems like he's not faring so well in these sparring sessions. And I know that he and his campmates, his other training partners, his regular training partners, have been disseminating this information that we are led to believe is misleading. You know, what we were talking about in the 6 o'clock hour was former high-level pro boxer, recently retired, Pauly Malignaggi, was doing what he thought, I think, would be a couple of weeks' worth of sparring, but he cut it short because he left in disgust. He left Conor's camp very angry. But he had a couple of sparring sessions with Conor McGregor. This is a former high-level pro boxer, former boxing champion, helping Conor prepare for Floyd Mayweather. And when you're sparring, that's sacred, right? Because sparring sessions, very easy to take out of context, very easy to lie about a sparring session. Fighters who have honor don't talk about sparring sessions. It's just business behind the scenes. You keep it behind closed doors. Well, McGregor's teammates released this photo in the ring during a sparring session. Pauly Malignaggi is on his back. McGregor is standing up. They made it look like McGregor knocked him down or knocked him out cold, when Malignaggi says that fiction, complete lies, fiction, did not happen. I got pushed. I fell on my back. It was a push or a trip, not a knockdown or a knockout. Some idiot snapped a photo of me on my back, and they made it look like I got knocked out when it didn't happen. And there were other eyewitnesses who backed up Malignaggi's story. Fiction, it didn't happen like that. It wasn't a knockout. The guy got tripped. He got pushed over. That's the end of the story. For as much as I love Conor McGregor and I respect him as a showman and as a fighter, I don't like it when you throw sparring partners under the bus, especially when you're lying about stuff. That I do not stand for. And Chang is right. If he's not dismantling Pauly Malignaggi in a sparring session, how's he going to beat Floyd Mayweather? Because there's a pretty big drop-off, a pretty big gap between Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Pauly Malignaggi. If you can't beat that guy in training, how are you going to beat Floyd Mayweather in a fight? Leaving the fight game here, we watched developing Miami Dolphins news. Ian Rappaport at Rapsheet from the NFL Network, NFL.com, he tweeted this earlier this hour. Dolphins and quarterback Jay Cutler's reps have had discussions about a potential deal, sources say. Nothing has been agreed upon. He's the top choice. Man. So again, this is nothing is signed. Cutler is not necessarily on his way to Miami, but they're working on it. It supports what I've been saying all day, that he would be the first guy they reach out to because of Gase's relationship with Cutler. And just for the familiarity, I've been of the mind for the last day, because obviously the Tannehill story broke yesterday morning when he hyperextended the knee. It doesn't shock me to hear that Adam Gase would favor the quarterback he has a history with and a relationship with. He coached Jay Cutler. He was his offensive coordinator in Chicago 2015. Jay had a good year that year. I know it was 11 interceptions. Was it 21 touchdowns, 11 interceptions? Considered to be one of Jay Cutler's best years under Adam Gase. And he spoke very highly of Jay Cutler ever since. And now with Tannehill's future very uncertain. And honestly, I don't see how in good conscience Tannehill doesn't get surgery. It's my opinion, not my medical opinion, because I'm not a doctor, but my opinion in gathering all this information is, you know, you have a close brush with catastrophe last December. You sprain the MCL and the ACL, not complete tears, but partial tears, sprains. And you get enough medical opinions, you shop for medical opinions that tell you, hey, there is an option not to have surgery. You don't have to have surgery. You can try to rehab. And so you rehab. You prepare for the past 8 months to come back and be 100% for training camp. But then to see in training camp, after you had opted against surgery, the knee is not stable. Because when you have compromised ACLs, you lose stability. We didn't know how compromised the ACL was. But clearly, with the way that knee buckled, it is not stable. And so now, doctors are saying, and I think this time you have to get the surgery, that the only way to get that stability back is to have reconstructive knee surgery. Tannehill rolled the dice the first time. I don't see how he does it again. I don't see how. You know, he can try the rehab thing again, miss a couple of months rather than season ending. But man, if you're Chris Greer, Mike Tannenbaum, Adam Gase, Stephen Ross, how do you have any faith or any trust that Tannehill's knee is going to be good long term? If you've just had this scare, if he doesn't have reconstructive surgery and fix it, it's going to be a ticking time bomb for as long as he decides not to get it surgically repaired. Since it's not fair to anybody, Ryan Tannehill included. Because, listen, I wish Tannehill the best. I want him to have a long career. I don't want he, not to mention us, the fans, but he to have to go out there and in the back of his mind think, anytime I take a step, anytime I plant with my left leg, I am risking and flirting with disaster. I don't want that to be in the back of his mind for the rest of his career, and I don't want that to have to be in the back of his mind, back of the minds of his coaches and his bosses or fans. It's not fair to anybody. So I hope he opts for reconstructive surgery. I do. And of course, if and when that happens, you're looking at 9 months to 12 months without Tannehill under center. The Dolphins absolutely have to bring in a quarterback. Whether it's somebody who can come in and potentially start, like Jay Cutler, who they're talking to, or Colin Kaepernick, or Tony Romo. I mean, Tony Romo, to be quite frank, that would be my top option. I mean, Tony, I think he's already working his ass off to prepare for a year of broadcasting. It seems like Tony may actually be set in retirement, but Jay Cutler, from day one, he didn't have as many options, I don't think, as Tony Romo did. Like, Jay Cutler, I never really felt was content with retirement, was looking for an opportunity like this. I think it's more likely he comes out of retirement. And obviously, Colin Kaepernick is not retired. But Jay Cutler is the one with that relationship with Adam Gase. You know, if he comes back, if he comes in and has a great year, who knows what that does for Tannehill's long-term future. If you want to get in, share your infinite wisdom with us via the phone lines, 305-567-0560. 954-567-0560, pound 560 on your cell. You can text us at 56022 on the plumbers911.com text line. But please don't text and drive, by the way. Hey, you can join Kevin Rogers tomorrow at Twin Peaks in Davie. He'll be broadcasting live from 11 to 1. Oh, it's 1 to 3? Oh, okay. See, it's set. See, Manny Chang doing work over there, my friend. 1 to 3 tomorrow, Kevin Rogers. He'll have all the latest post-game coverage from the Dolphins scrimmage that morning at the stadium. Twin Peaks is located on University off 595 in Davie. Jason Taylor is being enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame tomorrow night and will carry his speech live. Our coverage starts at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. I'll be anchoring that. Listen here online at WQAM.com or on your smartphone with the TuneIn app. Fight Night continues next here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Moved up by the quarter deck on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
Texture writes in, Dono, I can't believe you're the type that will pay for that quote-unquote fight just so you aren't left out. That's part of it. I stand by what I said, that you don't want to be the guy who misses it. But it's not to say that I'm not interested. I just, my expectations are in line. And I encourage all of you to do the same, where if you watch, when you watch Mayweather versus McGregor, especially if you pay for it yourself, understand going in, you're just paying for a good time. You're paying for a spectacle. The walkouts are going to be amazing. The stare down before they touch gloves, if they touch gloves, and the stare down when their names are being introduced by Jimmy Lennon Jr., and you know the pre-fight coverage before they actually walk out is going to be incredible. The fight itself, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure how the fight itself is going to go. Well, I actually am pretty sure how it's going to go. Mayweather's going to dominate, but is Mayweather going to really lay hands on him like he rarely does, or is Mayweather going to dance around, throw some counter left hooks, and just sort of adjust to what Conor gives him and cruise? I think if Mayweather wants to really make a statement, you got to be more aggressive than usual. And I think you can afford to be more aggressive than usual since you're in there with a neophyte. Like, since you're in there with somebody with literally zero professional boxing experience, you can afford to open up. Whether Mayweather takes that advice or not is completely up to him. But yeah, okay, when he's in there with Manny Pacquiao, or he's in there with Miguel Cotto, or he's in there with Sugar Shane Mosley, yeah, Mayweather is a pretty passive defensive fighter, but that's with some of the best in boxing. Oscar De La Hoya, same thing. Very defensive, passive fighter, picks his shots very carefully because he's going up against guys, some of which are future boxing Hall of Famers. But when you're going against the guy who, I guarantee you, his technique will be sloppy, his footwork sloppy, his punches sloppy. You know, McGregor is a very good stand-up striker in mixed martial arts, but the pure boxing game is very different. He's going to be sloppy compared to what Mayweather is used to. That should give him openings to be more aggressive. And you know, as far as the power goes, because, okay, Conor McGregor is a knockout artist in the UFC, has a powerful left hook. It's what he finished Jose Aldo with. The left hand is very dangerous. But from the reports that I've heard from those who have watched the film and have, you know, again, they're breaking sparring confidence. I don't like it on either side, but, you know, referees and like Pauly Malignaggi, who talked about the sparring sessions with McGregor, said the power for boxing is nothing special. When you put those 10-ounce gloves on, or, yeah, I guess in sparring, they're probably using the 16-ounce sparring gloves. You put the bigger gloves on, all of a sudden the power that he had with the tiny 4-ounce gloves doesn't necessarily exist with the 16-ounce gloves or the 10-ounce gloves that he's going to fight with in 22 days. So the power from mixed martial arts may not translate into boxing the way that Conor McGregor would like to. And Conor McGregor, who's also a good kicker and good with his knees in mixed martial arts, will not be able to use those weapons, or elbows for that matter, in a boxing fight. So just keep your expectations in line. Know that if you are paying for it, you're paying for a spectacle. You're paying for something that's going to be water cooler talk amongst friends and coworkers, social media talk, and you're watching something that will be a lot of fun if you're not expecting it to be Ali versus Frazier. If you keep your expectations in line, I don't think you're going to regret watching the fight. But if you are expecting it to be the next great classic, if you're expecting it to be like John Jones versus Alexander Gustafsson, you are going to be sorely disappointed. And that was the advice that I take to heart, and it was advice given to us a couple of months ago by Kevin Ioli of Yahoo Sports, who joined us a little bit earlier on this evening. So how you feeling about Jay Cutler potentially being your next Miami Dolphins quarterback? And here's how I hope it goes. And again, Ian Rappaport from NFL Network, NFL.com, saying that, yeah, the Dolphins are having conversations with Jay Cutler, and that's their first choice. Not Kaepernick, not Johnny Football, not Tony Romo, because Tony Romo may not be interested in coming out of retirement at this point, that Jay Cutler is their first choice. Again, doesn't surprise me, given the working relationship, the respect, and the history that he has with Adam Gase. You know, Gase may have decided here, okay, even though we are early in training camp, I've still got a limited amount of time to prepare a new quarterback for my system, for my offense, developing chemistry with our receivers and our offensive line. That learning curve is going to go a lot faster with somebody I've coached before and already knows our system. Whereas you bring in Colin Kaepernick, you've got to learn everything and install everything. Jay Cutler should be able to come in if he's in any kind of shape. That's the other question here. But if he's in any kind of shape, it should be a very easy transition process to bring him in here and run the offense smoothly. If he can run, period, right? Because he's been retired for the last several months. Has he been working out? Has Jay Cutler been going through NFL-style conditioning sessions? Or has he been sitting on the couch watching film, getting ready to be a Fox broadcaster? I'm wondering how that's going to go, right? That if you are to, let's say you get a deal done over the weekend, because you're not going to waste time with this stuff, right? If you're really looking to sign somebody, this could be done by tomorrow. We could be talking about this. Kevin Rogers, when he's on the air tomorrow after the scrimmage, he could be breaking down the terms of a Jay Cutler contract. Like, that could be a topic on these airwaves tomorrow, because if that's what the Dolphins are zeroing in on, they're not going to want to waste any time. So if they sign him tomorrow, he shows up to training camp Monday, is he going to be sucking wind and huffing and puffing, or is he going to look like a guy who's ready to come in and play some football? And here's the other question. If you sign Jay Cutler, what is his expectation when he comes in? Is he going to be handed that starting quarterback job on a silver platter? Does he automatically come in, first team reps, you're the starting quarterback, we are handing the keys to this franchise over to you, take it and run with it? Or is it going to go the way that I'd like it to go? Competition. Give Matt Moore a chance, right? I understand you want to sign somebody else because, at worst, if you roll into the season with Jay Cutler and Matt Moore as your two quarterbacks on the active roster, that looks a lot better than Matt Moore and Brandon Dowdy or Matt Moore and David Fales. To have two competent quarterbacks on your roster, no matter who starts, looks a lot better than Dowdy or Fales making the final active roster. But do they hand Cutler the starting job automatically, or do they let him fight it out with Moore? Let Cutler and Moore compete. May the better man win, and then I will have no regrets as a Dolphin fan if somebody wins that competition straight up and you've got the best possible quarterback out there come week one.
If you're a part of the Miami Dolphins wide receiving corps, who do you want?
I think it depends on who you talk to. I think if I'm Jarvis Landry, I want Jay Cutler. Because you know that if you're the safety valve, if you're the possession guy, if you're the move the chains guy, you're going to get a ton of looks there just from sheer volume of passes. Jay Cutler is the same guy who connected with Brandon Marshall once in a game for 22 receptions in a single game. Although if I'm Kenny Stills or Devontae Parker, especially Kenny Stills, who lives on the deep ball, not to say that Cutler doesn't have an arm. He can sling it. Cutler can sling it. He's a gunslinger. A la Matt, you got two gunslingers now potentially on the same roster. Again, Cutler deal is not done, but they're working on it. So if you've got two gunslingers there, but you still have to develop that timing and that rapport, right? So if I'm Kenny Stills, I'm maybe a little bit more worried. Like, okay, at least I know that Matt Moore and I have a shorthand on where I'm going to be when I run my route. May take a little bit more of a development with Jay Cutler. But overall, I don't think it's that bad of a drop-off. I think there'd be more of a, just like receptions-wise, if you'd sign Colin Kaepernick, who's going to run the football more, I think there could be more of a drop-off in receptions. But you know Cutler's going to come in and sling it. He is a shootout at the OK Corral, a gunslinger. So I don't know how worried, especially Jarvis Landry, would be at receiver. I want to thank those who listened in, texted in, called in tonight. Texter writes in, Jay Cutler will finally take down the Patriots and Tom Brady. Enjoy that weed.
By the way, Alex, most Bear fans that I follow on Twitter, they're saying watch Cutler lead the Dolphins to the Super Bowl.
Oh, wouldn't they love that miserable ass, annoying Bears fan? They hated Cutler. They despised the guy. Good. I hope he shoves it in their faces and wins a Super Bowl here. Want to thank Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports. Want to thank Dean Thomas, mixed martial arts coach, 9-time UFC veteran, for joining us earlier tonight. I will talk to you guys, remember, tomorrow. I'll be on tomorrow night, 7 p.m., for the Jason Taylor Hall of Fame induction enshrinement. I'll be on the air for that. Kevin Rogers will be on tomorrow, 1 o'clock, from Twin Peaks and Davie here on WQAM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.